Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. We're presenting this show for February 6th, Saturday, 2010, which is our normal LaRouche Show time period from 3 to 4 Eastern Time. But we're pre-taping our show live on February 4th with three guests in the studio with me. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and we're doing this because of the expected snowstorm on the east coast of the United States in the Washington area for February 6th. Al Gore hasn't caught on to what really is happening, the rest of us have. And we are glad to be able to have this program to discuss breaking news. But of course, anyone listening, we will not be taking emails or interaction at this time. But the topic we have for this program is that humanity can't wait. Obama must go. No more British Empire. And the particular focus we have is that Lyndon LaRouche has initiated this, both in his January 30th, 2010 webcast, which I encourage everyone to see, especially on our own website, LaRouchePub.com for the EIR online. You can have the transcript, or you can see the video on LaRouche's Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com, from January 30th. But what has happened is, on February 3rd, LaRouche issued a statement, why Obama must be impeached. And part of the occasion for this, there's a lot of background, and our guests will be discussing this, is that the White House has released its new budget for the United States. It was put out February 1st, and LaRouche had heard in advance that among the many horrors of this was to eliminate the funding of the NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Agency's project for manned space mission, to cut it out entirely. So this is a kind, this itself we'll discuss, is it points up that we're in a turning point situation for the very existence of the United States and for humanity. Now, our guests today, I'll announce them all and then turn to our first guest. I'm glad to have here in the studio Nancy Spanis, the editor-in-chief of EIR Online and Executive Intelligence Review.
Hi, Marcia.
And also with us offline, we have from the headquarters of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouche Youth Movement, and in fact, an editor of LaRouche PAC, Chris Landry. Hi, Chris.
How are you, Marcia?
I'm well, and I'm thanking you for taking time to be on. And I'll say right up front that Chris Landry is part of the team that put out on February 3rd a half-hour video feature, a LaRouche PAC TV feature called The Destruction of NASA. Now, that was in the works for some time, I'm sure we'll hear, but it couldn't be more timely right now for a briefing for people. And finally, we have from Texas, from the campaign trail of Keisha Rogers for Congress, who's running in a March 2nd Democratic Party primary for the seat where NASA is in Houston. We have our campaign organizer for the Keisha for Congress campaign, Ian Overton. Welcome, Ian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good. And I know he's been busy literally driving around Texas and the district today, so we're especially grateful that he can be on. As I said, you're in the district where NASA has the Major Johnson Space Center and many other things. So right back to the point of this statement by February 3rd by why Obama must be impeached. Let's begin with Nancy. What gave rise to the statement, Nancy? And what's going on?
What happened after the announcement from the president's chief robot, that's the head of the Office of Management and the Budget, Peter Orszag, on Monday, that the NASA budget would not include the manned space mission and instead would offload the idea of building vehicles that could take man to space to private industry. Lyndon LaRouche immediately responded with the assertion that this was a blow against the potential future of the United States and the future of the world. Now, that may not be obvious to everyone in this respect. There's been many, many decades of brainwashing about the question of the space program. And also, in Mr. LaRouche's thinking, of course, the event was not happening in a vacuum. This announcement of the elimination of manned space flight not only it came on top of a whole dossier of crimes which the Obama administration had fully embraced. Not more than approximately a month prior to this latest event, Lyndon LaRouche had upped the ante on the question of impeaching the president on the basis that he had actually been involved in a conspiracy to destroy the United States by committing war crimes through an Hitler-style medical plan that would deny medical care to the population, by being involved in a scheme to replace the currency of the United States as directed by the British Empire, in a scheme to hand over the control of financial management of the United States to away from the Congress to a separate so-called independent body of experts. All of these things well documented, and Mr. LaRouche said at that time, and I wrote the case out in not legal form, but in a such a way that one could see precisely what principles of the U.S. Constitution were being violated by the actions of the administration. He said, "This is what should happen, but we're not going to campaign for it right now because the time is not ripe to campaign for it." When the NASA decision happened, he changed his mind because not only is President Obama's administration a clear and present threat to the American population through its economic policy in general and its political policy in general. Fortunately, as everybody knows, the health policy has sort of gone down the tubes, thanks to the mass strike in the United States, but the policy remains. Mr. LaRouche said, now we have to campaign for it because if the president is able to get away with this kind of policy to eliminate what has been the crown jewel, is the way I think of it, or the heart and the brain of the American, the soul and the brain of American accomplishment. What do people think about around the world when they think about American accomplishment? Maybe on the one side, they think of winning World War II, and the second thing, taking man to the moon. And this is precisely what the decisions being taken by the administration would eliminate. So, Mr. LaRouche gave a very concise statement on the 3rd, saying this is the last straw. It means that there's no longer room on this planet for a United States and a President Obama to occupy the same space. In other words, if Obama stays, the United States gets destroyed. So Obama has to go. He can resign or he must be impeached. And this is the message that we have taken out with the sense of a real turning point right now in the American public and in the potential for our nation. This is a situation where we're mobilizing not just about something bad that's happening, but the potential for good. And if we don't succeed in getting that, mobilizing and inspiring people to fight, in effect, this is a demand for the American people to fight for their future by helping us get rid of Obama to allow that future to actually go ahead.
Right, and I'm sure our other guests have a lot to say about this, but let me draw you out on one point, Nancy, about impeachment and the nature of impeachment, just for everyone to know what must be done. One thing is, it was January 11th, I think, that the memorandum that you wrote called The Case for Impeachment of President Barack Obama was released around that time, hardly a month ago, and you outlined those points you just discussed. But I think you said in there that under our Constitution, the purpose of impeachment is the protection of the nation, as you just said. But it's not a criminal proceeding, it's not punishment or something, but it's to prevent a holder of office from doing harm. Could you just make clear what this means about bringing impeachment?
Yes, in the discussions of the founding fathers, when they were thinking about this, they were most concerned about, on the one hand, allowing there to be a stable, deliberative government with a strong executive. But secondly, they were very concerned to ensure that there was no abuse of that procedure that would bring irreparable harm to the nation. And the impeachment standard was a high one. It was only applicable really to the president and to Supreme Court justices and high officials of the administration. And it was only to be applied when those officials had been involved in high crimes and misdemeanors against effectively the Constitution itself, the people and the substance of the nation. And when you think of the core of the U.S. Constitution, there is nothing more central to it than the general welfare of the population and the means of achieving that general welfare, which is economic sovereignty, economic development, the nurturing of science and technology, and the minds of the people. So the fact is that what already, if the health bill had passed, right, then that would have been a clear and present danger to the American population for mass murder on a scale larger than Hitler, as LaRouche has pointed out. In this case, if the budget were to go through that would kill the future of scientific advance in the United States, and we could go through how that's necessarily the case. We probably don't have time on this show, and people should get to the LaRouchePub.com website, look at LaRouche's writings on this, get to 21st Century website. In fact, the elimination of this advanced scientific program also represents a clear and present threat to the continued existence of the American population. Because if we don't progress in this way with science and technology, we will die as a nation.
And you used the phrase in the course of things recently that take the you mentioned the currency, that really what the White House is the executive is doing is a British Empire type policy. And what you had raised in your memorandum for the case for impeachment of President Obama is that if you go against science and you undercut the nation, you're committing the United States to an international genocide policy, because that you're referring to the green jobs and the entire panorama here of dark age kind of policy.
Absolutely. And in fact, I don't actually know the total parameter in dollars and cents. Maybe somebody else, maybe either Ian or Chris do, of the NASA budget. But what I do know is that while killing the manned space program, they increased the budget for green foolery, for satellites that are going to
Oh.
try to figure out, how much carbon dioxide's being emitted and probably how much methane comes out of the ass of cows around the country. I mean, whatever. They say in a totally lunatic way that they're actually promoting science by shifting money from the advanced space development to put man in space to shifting it to environmental detection and control of things which are actually essential to greening our planet.
And one other point you mentioned about privatization being raised as a wonderful alternative to help. In fact, the president's science advisor saying
Right.
this is Mr. Holdren, who's against nuclear power and advanced science.
Right.
But this is another case where, in fact, speaking of clear and present danger to the nation, the people advocating privatization and globalization as a policy, there's famous names behind this in the Democratic side, Felix Rohatyn or George Shultz. They want to do this to the military.
Right. Absolutely. They want to do it to military intelligence, which is a crime. They want to do it. They are doing it to our military. In fact, there are more mercenaries in Afghanistan than there are regular military forces. And now they want to do it for space in with companies, two of which have never launched anything in their lives before, and the other two have. Are connected with Boeing, and they've done a certain. They probably have competent people there, but they aren't the crew that has been assembled by NASA over a whole period of time, which has the fundamental competence. So, it's an ideological shift in the direction of British feudalism, no more, no less, and the and in fact, the British are very happy. That this decision was made as put forward in the London Economist just yesterday. That's a magazine that most people may not know, but was actually around back at the time of the Civil War and was egging on the Confederacy at the time against the United States. So they're committed historically, the financial forces behind the London Economist, to the destruction of the United States. They see the destruction of NASA and they say, Whoopee, this is great.
Well, Chris or Ian, if you want to bring out any point or put it to Nancy now, please, it's open now. Otherwise, I know we thank her for being here. I know she has to leave. I have one more question before you go. But Ian or Chris, do you want any aspect of this brought out further?
Actually, there is something very interesting about, a common misunderstanding about. Well, I wanted to ask Nancy about NASA and specifically about the military. I guess one thing that is misunderstood is that the attack on NASA and the or the privatization, I should say, same thing, right? And the privatization of the military is directly an attack on the United States as a culture and as a nation. And I guess one of the big ironies is that. All these private companies that are so-called being called on to participate in the commercialization of space, none of them have ever gone to space, and I really don't think they really intend to go to space. It's, I mean, the thing is about going to space is it's not something which is a market principle in the sense of Adam Smith and in the sense of free trade. There's nothing that is bestial about going to space. There's no market pleasure, I guess you could say, in going to space. It's all cognitive. You have to do it from the standpoint of a credit system, which invests in the cognition and the development of the higher side of mankind. I think that's sort of a big irony in the whole situation. Like, what do these guys actually plan on doing with the privatization of NASA?
I think you're absolutely right that they have no intention of actually going there. The amount of money that's being devoted to it isn't really that large, number one. At the press conference where they announced at the National Press Club on the 2nd, they had no goals that were being put forward. no timetable, no indication of going to Mars by this, you know, after going to the moon or other sequence of accomplishments that were wanted. There was no vision that was actually being put forward for the accomplishment of the program, and therefore you can pretty much ensure that the program won't exist, because if it has no future goal, which, as you say, is a goal that can't be defined by market forces but only by the achievement of mankind as a cognitive being, then the it's just not going to happen. And it was even put forward in the by hostile questioners in the press conference that many people who've looked at the tragic accident of the Challenger, I guess 1986, whenever that blew up, attributed the fact that that accident could happen to the fact that already by that point there was no vision and drive for a Moon-Mars mission in the space program, and therefore shortcuts were being taken which would satisfy, you know, some other criteria other than achieving the fundamental goal.
Right, thank you. And thank you, Nancy, in case we're not
okay,
trying to get
you
rid of
guys, you. You guys have a lot of fun. I watched Chris's video, and I think it's great. And I, you know, you should really talk a lot about that as well as other things. Get people to watch it and send it around. This is really very important to, you know, as I said, because we're getting people to fight for something positive and totally central to the American identity, and it will broaden the mass strike process in a way that's absolutely essential for our victory in the immediate term ahead.
Thank you. Well, let me put in the plug. She's talking about the destruction of NASA. It's about 32 minutes. It was posted February 3rd, and you can find that on www.laroucheepac.com. And well, Ian, if it's okay with you, because let's go, Chris, why don't you say why you, I'm not asking you to describe your 30-minute video, but the point of putting out what's been happening with what the potential and hopes and what the destruction of the NASA space program in the United States has been.
Well, I can guess I could give sort of an overture. So
okay.
Well, one thing that's commonly misunderstood, even by NASA insiders, is that the current state of NASA, which is, you know, low budgets and many projects that are pursued but then are cut off for budget reasons, for money reasons, which tends to demoralize a lot of these scientists and engineers who are working on these projects, it's not really understood why that's happening. A lot of these people who are probably very smart people find themselves in projects which just go, you know, are pursued but then are cut. So that's the current state of NASA, basically. And on top of that, NASA gets blamed as being a waste of budgetary resources. You hear this all the time, like, you know, the government spending too much money on this and that, and these things are not on time. And we're basically just throwing money into space. And that has been the attitude really since the 1970s, although there have been some slight achievements and which were useful, you know, in satellite technology like the Hubble Space Telescope, the X-ray telescope that's up there, the shuttle program, which was decent, but really kind of limited us to a low Earth orbit, or, you know, LEO. So, and then there's the space station, which is also useful, but that's really it. There's nothing else that's going outside of that. And now that shuttle program's coming to an end this year, I think. And the space station's going to be done in the next several years. And we're not even done building the thing. And the program that was designed to replace that, the Constellation program, has now just been axed. by the Obama administration. The Constellation program was designed to replace the shuttle, also to get us to the moon and get us to Mars. There may have been some mistakes in the program or some, you know, cost-cutting corner-cutting, but nonetheless, that was the remnants of some intention of American presence in space. That's gone now. Okay, so how did we get to this situation? That's really the substance of the video that was produced a couple days ago.
Right.
Not just how we got there with, you know, budgetary reasons, you know, not just money questions, but what was the inside political environment which produced the current state of NASA today? Whereas 40 years ago, we had some of the most advanced craft to take us to the moon, to take us even beyond, which was never even used, like the nuclear rocket programs that got cut under Nixon. All these things were way ahead of their time and took only a couple years to develop. It was like 3 years to develop the lunar lander, which was probably one of the most sophisticated flying craft we've ever developed. And here it is 40 years now from then. We don't have anything close to that. So a lot of this stuff that happened to destroy NASA was an internal political and cultural shift that happened, especially after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. One of the highlighting, I guess you can say the highlights of that change was Lyndon Johnson, you know, who had his mistakes and he had his weaknesses, but under Eisenhower as a senator, he was someone who had fought for NASA, not just as a competition with the Soviet Union, but as a way of saying, well, if we're going to, quote-unquote, compete in the Cold War with the Soviets, why don't we, instead of going to war with the Soviets, why don't we demonstrate that the United States culture has a scientific capability that can provide leadership for the rest of the world, thereby increasing the gravitation of other nations to the United States' cause. You know, not a bad idea. And he fought for these things in the Senate. And then, under Kennedy, he helped, you know, pursue that along as well. And then, when Kennedy was assassinated, all of a sudden, he was about Vietnam, and he was about the Great Society, which is an excuse for basically thinking very small and very pessimistically. That's what the Great Society, I guess, turned out to be. And the budgets were cut from Apollo, which was the leading science driver of the United States at that time. And after we landed on the moon, that was it. We didn't do anything else after that. The shuttle program got its start under Nixon, but that was really it. So it's a real, you can look at something like that and say, well, what happened to this? What happened to the United States? Why do you have this guy Johnson who was so committed to space? Then the next thing you know, he's terrified of doing anything that has to do with space, and he's thinking very small. And you can even hear it in his recorded conversations that have been released over the past couple of years. You can hear it in his voice, how destroyed he became during his presidency, and subsequently why he didn't run for re-election. So, I mean, that's really the what our intention was with the video, is to uncover the real political and cultural process that led to the destruction of the spearhead of science, technology, and development within the United States. It's really the highest pinnacle of the United States culture that was destroyed.
Right.
And that was really the intention, that it wasn't just another one of our industries like rail or farming or something else that just happened to be destroyed because of a post-industrial society. It was the thing that was driving every other industry within the United States that was specifically targeted for that reason, and it still is this day.
Right.
Hope that works.
Good. Then we can keep, there are different points to bring out about that, I'm sure, but your comment about this takes us to what Keisha Rogers, who's running for office on the LaRouche plan policy in Texas, she issued a statement, I think it was January 30th, saying it would be national suicide to allow the cutting of the manned space program of NASA and to this scale back of NASA. That was her expression, it's national suicide. So Ian, you're speaking to us from from her district in Houston, and you've been literally campaigning with her all day today and over these weeks. What do you want to say about the immediate or general reaction or your observations in the in NASA land there?
Well, what we've been doing is taking this idea that Chris is developing, that there is no separation between the idea of an economic recovery or economic progress and the idea of a space program. And of all the places in the country, probably the place that resonates the most is, of course, here in Texas, where people have built entire lives around the spillover technologies and the centerpiece technology of actually having a manned space mission. And so what we have to do, actually, the key focus in our organizing has been kind of twofold. On the one hand, we want to get these, and we're working in dialogue with some of these people who work with a Boeing, Lockheed, NASA, private smaller machine shops and so forth, and getting them a sense that they don't have to go along to get along. And there is an advocate out there fighting for them, since sometimes they aren't allowed to organize being government employees. That's the one aspect. The other aspect has actually been to recruit a whole new generation of people into a political fight. So we've been actually targeting campuses all over the place. There's a number of campuses in the immediate vicinity around Johnson Space Center to talk to mathematics and engineering students and say, well, look, you know, you think you have a job when you get out of school, but actually, if these cuts go through, you're not going to have a job, you're not going to have a country. And you can say that to anyone in any field, and it will resonate with them, because it's known that, as Chris was describing, NASA is the highest and most developed boundary of our knowledge of the universe, of the entire universe. And by having a mission for 20 or 30 years, you generate breakthroughs in every field of life. And so that's something that we've been taking to the student body, to the younger people who are generally understandably apathetic about politics, because they see that we went from 8 years of bad to now a little over a year of much worse. And so we have a lot of things we've been doing on that flank, on that aspect.
Good. One thing is, you were saying about the bringing the what we're dealing with is the prospect of breakthroughs in every field of life as a way of life. And Chris, I know you developed some of this sense when you quoted, is it Clinton Anderson in the late 1950s? That
right.
who knows what all we would have. Look at what we were going to have that we didn't expect. Do you want to say more about this?
Sure. I think one thing that is particularly interesting about what happened in the post-war period, after you had, you know, the series of, economic collapses with in the late 50s. If you look at, like, when, for instance, when Kennedy came into power as the president, he really wasn't too excited in the beginning, at least from what I've seen of all of his press conferences and things like that, namely because of the establishment around him that got him involved in the Bay of Pigs and various other fiascos. And you can see that a very interesting shift in his presidency when he decides to assign the nation to a mission of going to the moon. And it's even clear to Kennedy, I mean, he's at least sharp on it, that this means developments in all kinds of fields, in all kinds of sectors of the economy. And that sparked something interesting in my mind, which I don't think a lot of people are conscious of today, which is that as a nation, as a country, as a culture, the people need a mission. And at all times, generally, there is some type of mission that is going on, whether that's for the good or for, I guess you'd say, the bad or the entropic. And it seems that's what happened with the United States. At one point, we had a mission to go to the moon, and actually was to go to Mars. That was really the mission. It wasn't just to go to the moon. The moon was the testing ground for Mars, just as the Mercury program was the testing ground for going to the moon, and so on. You know, these things worked in a certain type of proportion. It was just cut off, and we never experienced going to Mars. So we were left with the moon, which is good, but nonetheless. And then the mission in the United States all of a sudden was shifted to that of Indochina War, a land war in Asia, which is from our great friends, the British, right? And that became our mission, and that destroyed the country. That was what everyone's life was centered around, this Vietnam phenomenon and social chaos that went along with it. Today, it's kind of the same thing. Today, you look at what is the nation engaged in? Well, we're still engaged in this crazy war on terror. We have all of our young guys are going over to Iraq and Afghanistan and who maybe Iran very soon, who knows. And that produces an incredible amount of pessimism in the young people, where they have no future. They're stuck playing the violent video games that are created by the military or by, not by the military, but, you know, by people who are training these youth to be the, you know, basically school shooters or terrorists or whatever. Or they're stuck on MySpace or whatever, right? They're not thinking about how to pursue a mission that's going to develop mankind. They're thinking about this dynamic which is organizing society, or they're involved in it, they're wrapped up in it, that is destroying society. So I think without a national mission, like what Kennedy did, you're going to get chaos, and you're going to get pessimism. You're going to get a depression. You're going to have entropy.
Right. Now, one thing is, apropos of what you're saying, Chris and Ian both, in the last 2 days, 48 hours, there's been an upwelling of coverage in the local press. The Houston Chronicle, the Huntsville, Alabama paper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and in Florida, I think the Orlando Sentinel, of people directly from the NASA installations, some of them speaking out. I'm not saying they are taking leadership, as Keisha Rogers is doing, or LaRouche is putting it on the line. This is impeachable action by the White House. But one example is the John Glenn Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio, where they're working on the Constellation Project. And one of the contractors says, "I keep hearing how people are not inspired by our space program." And he says, "I never met anyone who was not awed by launches, nor by what we plan to do when I told them what we plan to do." So this just speaks that with this rotten development, it could be the spur for yet further action in the mass strike sentiment of revulsion against what's coming out of the White House. Do you find that, Ian? And you've mentioned the campuses, the direct contractors with NASA. How does it look?
Well, the only reason anyone might possibly think that NASA is not inspiring or important is just because they've been brainwashed by the pop culture. NASA and the development of our space program has touched every single aspect of our lives in ways that are right in your face, that you deal with and interact with on an everyday basis, to things that are subtle and behind the scenes. And the only reason why someone might not care is because of imposed ignorance. And when people do find out just exactly how awesome it is, their humanity comes back. They come to life. I can give you an example. In early December, I went to a conference held by the American Astronautical Society. And one of the smaller group sessions, a woman was giving a discussion relating a story she had, an experience she had had, where they would have these focus groups to get people in the population to learn about this, how NASA touches every aspect of their lives. And one of the spin-off technologies they were going through were the new image sensors that had been developed, as in, for example, through Hubble, which now allowed for the non-invasive imaging of breast cancer at its most earliest stages, which saves thousands of dollars and lives. And during this session, one of the people who was in there from the population breaks out into tears because her entire family for generations has died from breast cancer. And fact is that one of her relatives survived multiple problems with it because of this technology. And she was so moved that she got the point. And the point was that if you're not doing research for 20 or 30 years on a mission, you're not going to encounter the barriers in physics that will require you to make the breakthroughs that create spin-off technologies that affect every aspect of your life. And so that was said by the group. It moved. They were moved. They developed a sense of their own, of the immortality that NASA imparts to the human species, that because of what we do with this, we can move beyond our years. We can touch and improve the lives of generations not even born. This is what NASA does. This is why when Obama is talking about giving another bailout to Wall Street by privatizing funds for NASA, that what he's doing is he's condemning the United States to hell. And that is impeachable. That is a violation of his oath that he took upon entering the office. And this is what we've been taking to people. We've been taking this to young people. We've been taking it to the person when we're knocking on their door, walking around districts, when we're flagging down people at intersections and giving them leaflets. This is the level of discussion that we're communicating. That's why people who work for NASA shouldn't try to say, oh, it's not so bad. You know, we're losing this thing, but we're getting all this other stuff. No. That's going along to get along. We have to fight this proposal that Obama's putting forward, and we have to demand for the benefit of the United States and the world and the known universe to go forward with the manned exploration of the universe.
That's terrific. And let me ask you, Ian, because this is LaRouchePub.com, where EIR Online, our weekly show, as people know, and I encourage everyone to make a point of subscribing who does not to EIR Online, which you can find on LaRouchePub.com. But Ian, anything you want to say about the final weeks of the countdown to March 2nd? You're a political activist right now, but what events are you having? Or I'm sure you want people to support you. I understand you have KeshaForCongress.com as your website, right?
Yeah, that's the website. It's K-E-S-H-A for Congress.com. And there's a couple events we're having. The big one is going to be a fundraising dinner in honor of Abraham Lincoln, which we're having on President's Day at the Hampton Inn in Seabrook. That's 3000 NASA Road 1 in Seabrook. And that's going to be from 6 to 9 p.m. We're asking people to do a minimum $25 contribution ahead of time, which they can do by going to our website and doing it online, or they can give us a call and send in a check. Our number is 713-809-0052. But I mean, the key thing here is that if anyone, I mean, that's important. People should come to that, and they should contribute and support our campaign so that we can go out there and mobilize. And the other thing, of course, is the vote. Early voting starts February 16th. The primary is on March 2nd, and anyone who wants to stop Obama's policies, anyone who sees the indispensable value of NASA, I don't care if you're Republican or what, you have to vote in the Democratic primary for Keisha. In fact, if you're a Republican, you should vote for Keisha just so that you can stop Obama, because if we win this primary, given that the Democratic Party right now is of this district is going flight forward, embracing everything Obama stands for, almost uncritically, they're just as dead as politically. and they seem to be really. So that's the way we're gonna. That's what we're doing by. This is the you know, Massachusetts victory was sometimes referred to as the second shot heard around the world. If we win this primary, this is going to be the shot heard around the universe. because this is the mass strike, really rising up to grab from his high seat of power these horrible people with their horrible policies.
That's great. In fact, we can hear you loud and clearly, even though your cell phone from the campaign trail is cutting out a little bit now and then. But I think the point is very well made. And speaking of the universe, or at least outside the United States, Chris, one thing we're hearing from different places around the world who have hopes for the United States and for what the LaRouche movement is doing here. They were appalled at this announcement of cutting, of the United States cutting the manned space mission, even if it had been underfunded. But you brought out in your history of NASA since 1958 that the President Kennedy even saw it as a great foreign policy positive potential for collaboration with the Soviet Union and with other governments in a shared mission for mankind, right? So the fight that Ian Overton is describing about Keisha Rogers' candidacy and other people on this policy, it's part of a positive fight impact we can have on the world, right?
Yes, exactly.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, it's actually a very important point because, and it does have everything to do with what Ian's talking about, terms of the shot heard around the universe. One of the common misunderstandings, again, about our space program, and if you watch any space documentary, even the good ones, they always talk about our space program being nothing but a competition with the Soviet Union, the whole space race phenomenon, right? Now, that is not, we did have a space race and there was competition, but that's only like half of the truth. The other half is the fact that at a certain point in Kennedy's administration, it became clear that this could be a way to end the Cold War. And that is one of the things that I think seriously pissed off the British about Kennedy. The other thing was, of course, the Vietnam War. That was what they wanted, and Kennedy wasn't necessarily going for that towards the end of his, you say life at this point. But yeah, the cooperation with the Soviets was something that is overlooked in just about every single, I mean, I can't think of a single one that actually talks about the cooperation with the Soviets. And that was a real, that was Kennedy's idea that this is humanity's mission. This is not just the United States. The United States, obviously, from a deeper standpoint, is the best that humanity can offer. It's represented in this country. It's represented in our Constitution. So I think Kennedy basically caught on towards the end of his life. And it came out in that way. And, you know, would have been it for the Cold War, really. So, but that didn't happen. He was assassinated about 2 months after he made that speech to the United Nations.
Yeah, you can ask any astronaut, and they'll tell you that Apollo Soyuz did more for international diplomacy than just about anything in the so-called political realm.
Right.
Yeah.
And let me to continue on how people see things. Ian, also, this business of the constant talk by President Obama, but you know you hear it everywhere about, oh, we are for science, we're for these green jobs and all this kind of thing. Do you find in the general population more of a revulsion against it or an understanding rather than go along with any of that now or not?
Well, there's a couple of things. People, the area down here in Texas, because there is a lot of oil industries and so forth here, people are more understanding that the idea of man-made global warming isn't true.
Like the coal states, I know, like West Virginia or Pennsylvania.
I know, global warming is killing all of our plants with frostbite here.
Yeah.
It's been snowing in Texas a couple times. Just to let you know.
Well, I think some of the windmills are also frozen stiff up in Minnesota.
Yeah, we just got to stick Obama in front of a windmill, and that'll generate all the electricity we need. Have him give a speech.
Mm-hmm.
So what's funny is that actually Keisha's opponent, Pete Olson, who currently is the incumbent, is ironically in agreement with Obama, even though he protests loudly because he must, knowing if he wants to keep his job, he has to be an advocate of NASA. But he's been arguing for the cutting of government spending for years, and now Obama is right up in line with that. It's rather strange that that Olson is suddenly shifting ground and saying, well, you know, I just really love NASA. It's kind of inconsistent with his entire message up to this point about government spending in general.
Right. Of course, in another part of your state, in Texas, you had the famous windmill windbag. So we don't have to discuss him this time. But that was another problem for the crazy green jobs faction of degeneracy. But speaking of this,
Keisha's policy is actually to have a massive increase of man-made CO2 by launching an industrial drive.
Okay.
As one of the nice things we should do for our plant fellows who also have the earth with us, since they breathe CO2 as food. We thought it would be a nice gesture towards them.
So one thing, Chris, again, turning to what the history since the 1958 NASA Act, is that you even brought out that Wernher von Braun, the famous scientist and really father of this going into space, I guess you could say among the fathers, but he actually spoke out explicitly on the shift in the American population in the early 1970s. That is the problem we're fighting now. Do you want to say more about that?
Well, that's the other side of just the purely political destruction of NASA. I mean, one of the big ironies is that you have, on the one hand, you have people like George Shultz and Wiesner and these guys who are generally considered to be the right wing, who were taking down NASA by denying funds and denying, cutting the budget out of certain programs. And then you had this phenomena of the whole left, the environmentalists, which came out of this whole 68er culture, which is to go back to, you know, being monkeys. And here these guys are saying that technology is the downfall of man, that we have to go back to being, middle-aged cavemen, basically. And von Braun saw this, and he was somebody, actually, who was, ironically, he was right smack in the middle of Nazi Germany at Peenemünde, where a lot of the V2 rocket, or I like to call it the A4 rocket, not the V2, because V2 was the Hitler name for it. But he developed all the rockets and was working on all this stuff in Nazi Germany, so I think he had a very good sense of what irrationality was. I mean, I don't really know. I'm speculating here.
Right.
When he came to the United States, he was immediately hired on to be a key part of the space of the rocket development. I think it was out of the Redstone Arsenal, and then later on out in El Paso. I forgot the name of the.
Right.
But anyway. But he had a very clear sense of the shift, the cultural shift that was going on inside the United States, and he identified it, which was kind of interesting. He identified it as not being a result of just a bunch of young people who had crazy ideas, but he identified that there was a cultural, sociological engineering operation that was going on from the top. And he saw the manifested effects of that engineering on the student populations. And that's something that that Lyndon LaRouche has identified as specifically the downfall of the United States is this cultural shift towards environmentalism, towards the anti-blue collar, and towards anti-science. So it's kind of an irony. You have this thing on the right with the whole Schultz-Nixon crowd tearing down the budgets in NASA, then you have this thing on the left where you have the environmentalists and the so-called the liberal-minded people. They're also anti-NASA, anti-science. So it's coming from both directions, which is really the same thing, if you think about it.
Right, absolutely. And that takes us back again to the kind of role of the organizing all around the country, and these three congressional campaigns on the LaRouche plan at large that really, Ian, you said you are especially organizing on campuses. I understand you're having classes. Could you say more about the classes? Your website has one tonight. The nature of what you're tending to try and bring to new people.
Well, yeah. People respond fairly well when we tell them that the system is bankrupt and that they need to have an industrial driver to fix it. They know that. That's fairly clear. So just by our organizing, we've been invited in to speak to students in their classrooms by certain professors that we've built a contact base with.
Did you have one today, did you say, or no?
Oh, yeah, we have one tonight. It's actually it's kind of a training orientation for people who want to organize with us. We have because we've been going to these classrooms in colleges, we've been getting a new base of young people coming around. So they're helping volunteer with the campaign. The one tonight is on this question of the American system, what the system of Hamilton really is and how it functions, so that people get a sense of what is unique about protectionist capital rather than the free trade imperial method.
Great.
And then the big event, which we want everyone to come to, is the Lincoln Dinner on the 15th. That's going to be crucial. That we're going to have Harley Schlanger as a guest speaker. Keisha, of course, is going to give a description, and we're going to show just the relevance of Lincoln for today. You know, his driver was the Transcontinental Railroad, and ours is going to have to be the Transplanetary Railroad.
Right.
But I mean, the real crucial thing, I guess, is just that it's the youth really that are going to be the turnout and make the difference in this election, just like in 2006 under the drive to build the impeachment of Cheney. Today, it's the recruiting of a new generation into for their future that's really going to save NASA. That's really, I think, going to be the fundamental question, is when the young people of this nation demand a future and go out there and make it. And that really is the centerpiece of this campaign. That's what all three of these campaigns are bringing to the table, that the old, crusty party apparatus of both sides is just incapable of doing, because they have no ideas. And that's what we're bringing to the table.
Well, that's great. Well, Chris, let me ask you something. You're part of a team. There was a terrific feature video presented some months ago on looking to the heavens, the Moon Mars mission, and I understood this week that it's been translated in Russian and posted and available across Russia. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it happened a while ago, but yeah, it's in Spanish, it's in Russian, I don't know how many other languages, but it's definitely being passed around the world.
And that brings us, we're almost running out of time, but Chris, what else is your team or your teammates who might have a focus on other things, but what do you have in the works, or what do you, even if it isn't a product in the works, what is the focus of your intervention ongoing?
Well, the focus of the intervention is obviously on the redevelopment of the economy and the redevelopment of the United States as a nation and a culture. And I think that's a lot of what our videos are trying to target and to be deployed in the field and to, or around the world for that matter. So, yeah, I mean, there'll be more to come. you'll see it.
Right. And one of the, I'm going to use a wrong word and call it a companion video, but a week or so ago, 10 days ago, there was one put out on the nuclear renaissance in Asia. We had Alicia Saritani with us here on the LaRouche show. And I know that's now going all over Southeast Asia. It's going to the nuclear societies. It's gone viral, just in the best possible beneficial viral way it can. So with that, we conclude our time, but I just make the pitch again. It's time, if you don't, to subscribe or contribute to EIR Online, where you're listening. You're listening to LaRouchePub.com. You can certainly go and stay in touch with the campaigning, as you have just heard from Ian Overton with the Keisha Rogers for Congress campaign in Texas. And also, you can stay in touch with the LaRouche Political Action Committee as you wish. And I thank Chris Landry for being here. And so this will conclude the February 6th LaRouche show, which we pre-taped February 4th because of global cooling. And this is Marcia Mary Baker. Please, everyone, stay tuned again February 13th, 2010 for the LaRouche show, 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you very much.